Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley, and before we get underway with the episode, we can go straight to Boris Johnson for the very latest coronavirus advice.
doctors, 10,000 more nurses. You'll turn to that. That earlier, the NHS, David, as I said, that is where we are anyway, Chris.
He was asked a question at the press conference. He spoke for 4 minutes, and almost a quarter of that you've just heard. Just ums and ers from one answer. So the king of the three-word slogan can barely get a word out. Luckily, Keir Starmer's got a new three-word slogan instead. What is it again?
Security of prosperity. Respect.
Brilliant. Well, it's Wednesday, so it must be PMQ's unpacked. Well, it is, and it isn't. Because MPs are returning to Westminster from their Christmas recess, they started a bit later, which meant that PMQ's was at 3 o'clock, not during my radio show, but during Mariella Frostrop's. So Mariella plays the part of me, and I play the part of Tim Shipman or Patrick Maguire as we pause the action live from the House of Commons to analyse in real time what's going on across the dispatch box. But that's not the only change in casting. A few hours before PMQs was due to get underway, it was announced that Keir Starmer had tested positive for coronavirus again. I tweeted pointing out that he'd been told to self-isolate 6 times now and had tested positive 3 times and maybe should donate his body to science. A senior Labour source got in touch to point out that although, yes, he had self-isolated 6 times, he'd only actually tested positive 2x. No word, though, on body donation. So that's coming up in a moment. PMQ's unpacked with me and Mariella Frostrop watching Angela Rayner taking on Boris Johnson in the House of Commons. But first, we kick off with our columnist panel. It's Alibert, newly coined since just before Christmas. That's Alice Thompson. And providing the Bert, it's Robert Crampton.
So let's talk about vaccinations. And who is vaccinated and who isn't. And this Boris Johnson sort of keeps hinting at it and then slightly rowing back again. So he did it before Christmas. He said we need to have a national conversation about basically people who don't get vaccinated. And, you know, we can't put the whole country into lockdown for 10, 20% of people who aren't going to get the jab. And meanwhile, in Australia, there are very tough rules on who can and can't, what you can and can't do if you haven't been jabbed. But they've waived them to let Novak Djokovic in. Australia's very angry about this because he was exempted from vaccination rules. Everyone, all players and staff at the tournament must be vaccinated. Australians have criticised officials, politicians, Djokovic himself because of it. What do you make of this, Alice?
I think from the Australian point of view, it's appalling, just because if you have a very strict rule and then you let someone in because they happen to be a brilliant tennis player, it does, however brilliant they are, it does plays appallingly badly, because you're saying you've got one rule for one and one for the others, which, as we know in Britain, is the thing that drives us completely insane, as in Barnard Castle. So I would say, you know, you have to get vaccinated. I also think it's very difficult if you've got the number one tennis player not being vaccinated, because then you get all his fans and anyone who's a sports lover all looking at him thinking, well, if he's not vaccinated, why are we getting vaccinated? What's the reason he's not? Why is he being told by all his sporting experts that he isn't? And it may be there is a medical reason he can't be vaccinated, but if it's just because he feels that it's compromising his body in some way, that's not a great message, really, for everyone else.
What do you think, Robert?
I think Djokovic is a bit like Prince Harry. He's one of those guys who was really popular 2 or 3 years ago, and now people have a rather lower opinion of him. You know, he used to be this kind of jokey guy, and then who everybody admired, and now with his stance on vaccinations, that tour, if you remember, he organised a disastrous tournament in Split, I think it was, in 2020, where everyone pretty much got COVID. And now he's putting out this message, like Alice says, he's a hero to lots of people. He's a national hero in Serbia. And clearly there shouldn't be an exemption just because he's rich and famous and talented. I wonder, actually, when all the smoke has cleared from all this, from the lockdowns and the pandemic, whether there are going to be lots of stories about rich and famous people flying around the world to their heart's content in private jets and so forth. I suspect there are.
Yeah, well, you can track them, can't you? That's my problem, is that you can see that you can track the private planes, and they are going all over the place.
Yeah, I think it's going to
be one of... There is that sense. Mm. And I think it's going to be the same with, actually, people profiteering. There's going to be a sense of who made money out of COVID and who actually benefited. Because all of us are kind of, you know, everyone compromises to a certain extent, and people do bend the rules a bit. But very few people are making vast amounts of money out of it. And there are a few, and that just does really, really anger people.
Yeah, that's all gonna come out, I suppose. I mean, the real scandal, of course, talking about your column, Alice, is going to be care homes, isn't it? That's going to be, I mean, that is the ongoing scandal, and will be even more so when we've got the full details on that, I think.
I think the problem about care homes is going to be very much that actually, I mean, when you look at that, what's happened is the government felt so guilty that they didn't do anything about care homes at the beginning of the pandemic, that their reaction now has just been to close them down the whole time. So they've really incarcerated these old people for 2 years, which I think in the end is just unacceptable, mainly because most of them only have about 18 months in the care home. So they just don't see their family for the last year of their lives.
And that, so let's talk about your, I thought it was terrific, your column today.
Me too.
Alice. But you're right that it does feel like that every time. I mean, it's a very difficult, I mean, I suppose it's sort of say at the top, it is incredibly difficult to know what to do about care homes, because if you don't limit access to it, or, you know, you end up with COVID ripping through care homes. So they limit access to it, and then you have this just unimaginable issue of elderly people, often with dementia or other health problems, not able to see their loved ones. And but it does seem to be that we almost seem to make the exactly the wrong choice at every moment.
And my problem, I think, with the care homes is that I felt that maybe exactly as you did, that we should be locking down to protect them. But then having talked to a lot of the providers, and particularly this man, Jeremy Richardson, who has the third biggest set of care homes and looks after 167 homes with 8,000 people, he said that he feels like he's now being a prison warder, and that actually it's completely wrong. And in the last few weeks, they've only had one death from COVID. So I think his view really chimed with me, because I was thinking maybe if that's what they need, they should be locked up. But obviously, it's now causing more harm to most of the people than it is actually benefiting them in any way. And that he felt that people really are dying of loneliness now. And, my mother did die of loneliness last year. So, I mean, she just gave up after 11 months on her own. Mm. So I felt very strongly that it's still going on a year later. And that really got to me in the end, I think.
I suppose this is another bit, Robert. It's sort of point, because I've heard that so many times of people who have loved ones in care homes, and when those lockdowns kicked in, they basically gave up, because those family visits and stuff, that was basic, for entirely understandable reasons. That's what kept them going. And it's a reminder that, well, stopping everyone getting COVID, this sort of idea of zero COVID completely ignores all of the other impacts.
The I mean, I thought it was a tremendous column, and very moving, and the stats that that's what I took most from it. But the stats that I took from Alice's column were that the average stay in a care home is 18 months, and you know, and it ends with you know in the obvious way. And so it seems that if you're only there for 18 months, your quality of life is hugely more important than the extending that by the quantity by a little way. I mean, in the other stats, I thought, you know, 400,000 people in England in care homes. And I think Alice said that in the run-up to Christmas, 40 deaths from COVID compared with 1,800 this time last year. That indicates to me that, as she says in the column, the cure is now worse than the disease.
It's such a... Because, you know, we've had, in fact, before Christmas, I had a bit of a set to with one epidemiologist who was basically arguing that we must... You know, we must stop all deaths. We must have zero deaths, basically. You know, this is the general argument, not particularly what they were saying. But why isn't the government doing something to drive down all this? And this is,
but that's like saying we should never. If we didn't drive cars, we wouldn't have any road traffic accidents, would we?
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
think what was most painful for me was really seeing. Both my parents were in care homes when COVID started. One, my father's had dementia for 10 years, so he's been in the care home for the last year or two. And my mother really couldn't cope anymore, and then she. Had an accident and went into care home. So they were both in two different care homes at the beginning of the pandemic. And my father's care home, because everyone had dementia, they just left it open because they had to, because they couldn't keep people in their rooms. So they carried on with their singing and their painting and their, you know, watching TV together. And they had a very, very low death rate. And actually, when they had COVID, they did survive. No one actually in the care home died of COVID. Whereas my mother's care home, where they had myriad different issues. They were all shut in their rooms because they had to be. None of them had anything like dementia. But that it did really show, because a lot of them did just give up. And I felt it was just too awful to see two care homes so close to each other with very different policies, partly because they had to have different policies. But the different outcomes were just so startling. And I did feel that in the end, you probably shouldn't have been so draconian.
And I suppose the point that you're making, Robert, picking out that 18-month figure, length, most people would rather that that last year, 18 months, was pleasurable, did get to see their families.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the tough call is, even if in Alice's dad's case, the dementia home, which had been much more open, even if they had had a bad outbreak, which they didn't, thank goodness, but if they had had... It might still have been better.
That's like a risk worth taking.
To have had that quality of life and having a sing song and watching the telly, than being shut up in your room and, you know, maybe surviving, maybe not surviving. Because if you're talking about 18 months, I guess most of us would trade off. Would say, well, can you have half as long as that and have a great time, or would you want another 9 months?
Exactly.
Then
exactly.
we'd all probably go for the good time, wouldn't we?
And so, and I suppose that's the thing, that all those sort of headline figures that behind, or, you know, when people talk about the headline figures of what happened in care homes, there's a really, you know, there's a real life impact on that. And those numbers mean a difference.
Yeah.
Let's end on a slightly more positive.
It's got very somber, hasn't it? Yeah.
A more positive sort of outcome of coronavirus and pandemics and lockdowns. While everyone else is dressing down as a result of, you know, the suit is dead. Everyone's in joggers and we're all dressing down now. Robert, you're going in the opposite direction.
Well, I'm trying to. Poppy, the producer, said I was looking very smart, which is very sweet of her, as I came into the studio. That, for me, counts as a pair of black jeans as opposed to blue jeans, and a black jumper as opposed to a gardening shirt. So I'm making some progress after 5 days. I think it was the influence of doing that James Bond shoot, which I'm surprised you haven't mentioned, Matt, actually.
He's jealous, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't want to bring it up.
It's
been a while since I've been press ganged into dressing up stupidly.
The difference is I'm not press ganged. I go very eagerly. I'm going to put my tuxedo on when I get home. So I think it's that. I think that's the thing. I'm maybe just getting older and thinking I need to, you know, just smarten up a bit.
The spray tan. I assume that is a spray tan, isn't it? The
Yes, that's a spray tan. I think they overdid
that's a slightly
it.
Different.
Yeah, I was a very orange.
Yeah, I was going
to
say that.
I was a very orange James Bond. I was a very orange James Bond. The lady who came to do the spray tan said, "You know how much do you want?" And I just said, "I'll just go for it." And so she just put some more chemicals in the little box, and I think I overdid it. I was very orange.
She was doing a fence. Stick a bit more.
Rod
Sealing. And so yeah, the point exactly. You were making is that you've been going into meetings and senior colleagues have said you look like you've just come in for the garden.
Yes.
So you are smartening up.
Yes.
This is your New Year's resolution.
I am. I looked around and I realised I'm not a young kid anymore. I mean, I haven't been for a long time, but I've sort of fooled myself that I have been. And I've been here much more or less longer than anybody else now coming up. And I thought, you know, I've got to start looking and have a bit of gravitas, you know. For the clothing.
You've known Robert for a long time, Alice. Do you think he needs to smarten up?
Well, actually, I was more impressed by the fact that he said in his column that he was doing the gutters, and that's why he was in his I thought that was very impressive. I didn't know he did the gutters.
Manual, unskilled labour, that's my thing.
Yeah, manual. If you're doing that, I think then you have a reason to not be smart. But actually, it would be quite nice if everyone in the office, the men in particular, did smarten up a bit. I think the women are a bit smarter than the men in the office.
They are, aren't they? Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
There's always this interesting debate as well about between tabloids and broadsheets, which really surprised me.
Tabloids are always smart.
Yeah. They're always smart. They're always in a suit. You must have a suit on. You could be going out to knock on a door at any point. And broadsheet people, it's all, you know, jumpers with holes in.
Yeah, you still see that here with the people who have slippers. The people from who've come over from tabloid backgrounds. They're the smart ones here. You know, they're the jack and tie people.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone in a tie at the Times, I have to say.
I can, but we don't want to get into names. Because he might be in the lift listening at the moment.
Yeah, let's end it there before any of us get fired.
Yeah. Always excellent advice, Matt.
Alice Thompson and Robert Crumpton there, and I'd recommend both reading Alice's column and Robert's piece on being James Bond. You just need to get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast now. It's time for this.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley.
Well, yes, Matt Chorley does join us to help unpack Prime Minister's questions, which has been scheduled later in the day. It's normally at 12 p.m. every Wednesday, so Matt gets first dibs on it. But I had a quick word with the Speaker, you know, the sort of power I wield, and got it rearranged so we could cover it on this prem for once. Matt, welcome. I've tried to put the Prime Minister's questions on my iPad, and I seem to be in some private session of ministers at the moment, so I'm going to have to fiddle around with that. So I'm hoping you can give us a sort of dissertation on PMQs and how it works. So, first of all, are you expecting a kind of gentle entry into this new parliamentary session or a punchy start to the year?
Well, it's all a bit, you know, as there have been with pantos all over Christmas, the understudies are being called in. So it's not normally you and I do this. Normally, I'm joined by either Tim Shipman or Patrick McGuire to Paul's PMQs at midday. You're now playing the part of me. I'm playing the part of Patrick McGuire. But in the House of Commons, we've got stand-ins as well, because just a few hours ago, we heard that Keir Starmer's tested positive for COVID for the second time. So he can't turn up to PMQ. So it's Angela Rayner standing in as well. And I have to say, Angela Rayner does tend to be a bit more fun at PMQs. She's quite good at winding Boris Johnson up with sometimes slightly better jokes than he manages. So I'll be interested to see if she does that today.
Well, I did ask our listeners for questions that they had for the Prime Minister in the sort of build-up to our little session. And I have to say, if I had to take the general tone, they were pretty negative, pretty angry, you know, everything from why don't you resign to are you still there? One about Boris's hair, but maybe we can come back to that in a moment, because I think Angela Rayner is just about to stand up. I have no idea why I haven't got it on my iPad. But let's hear from the Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Angela Rayner, who's covering for Sir Keir Starmer, who's isolating again.
Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Angela Rayner.
Yeah! Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and a Happy New Year to you and the rest of the House. Mr. Speaker, over the Christmas break, the world lost a giant in the fight of equality and human rights, the great Desmond Tutu. Yeah. And I would like to offer my condolences to his family and to the people of South Africa. And I'd also like to thank all of those key workers who have kept our essential services running over the festive period, particularly all those staff and volunteers working at vaccination sites and our amazing NHS staff working incredibly hard with incredibly stretched circumstances. But I know we're going to come on to that after PMQs with the Prime Minister. And I'd also like to thank the formidable Sue Gray, who I know has been busier than Santa over the festive period. Mr. Speaker, in October, the Prime Minister said that fears about inflation were unfounded. But working people across the country are starting the new year facing rising bills and ballooning prices. So how did he get it so wrong?
Well, Mr. Speaker, what the government has been... and I, of course, I said no such thing, because inflation is always something that we have to be careful about. But what we are doing, Mr. Speaker, is making sure that we protect the people of this country throughout what is unquestionably going to be a difficult period. And that's why we are ensuring that we've lifted the living wage by record sums, Mr. Speaker. We make sure people have cold weather payments, making sure that they have the warm homes discount, all the other protections, the £500 million fund that we put in to help local councils look after people through what will be a difficult period. But the most important thing we can do to look after people during this very difficult time, Mr. Speaker, is to ensure that we take the balanced and proportionate approach that we are, to ensure that we're able to keep our country and our society going, Mr. Speaker. And that is exactly what we are doing. And that is why we doubled down on the booster programme, and that is why we are sticking with Plan B, Mr. Speaker. And that's the right approach for the country.
Angela Rayner.
Well, Matt, Prime Minister, off to a confident start there. None of those errs that you were playing so happily on your show this morning. He seems to have developed the art of oratory in the meantime.
Yes, I mean, there's quite a lot to unpick there. So you had Angela Rayner kicking off a tribute to Desmond Tutu. Then what she referred to about coming on to later when she was referring to coronavirus is that Boris Johnson immediately after PMQs is doing a statement on coronavirus. So that's why she's chosen to go on something else, because she'll be able to grill him on coronavirus later. Then that passing reference, blink and you miss it, to Sue Gray. Sue Gray is the only woman left standing who's investigating Boris Johnson's parties. You remember before Christmas, we had all this stuff about the parties. Simon Case, the cabinet secretary, was put in charge of parties. It then turned out that his office had a party, so he had to be taken off it. Sue Gray, as Angela Rayner said, busier than Father Christmas over Christmas. So I think we might come back to that at parties, I suspect, with Angela Rayner. But the Labour Party also focusing on, and this is why I think there's some mileage to be had for the Labour Party, focusing on money in your pocket. Keir Starmer's big speech yesterday, security, prosperity and respect. Lots of, I mean, even he forgot the slogan yesterday. But focusing on, you know, money in people's pockets, loads of stuff, you know, inflation's up, the cost of living is up, taxes are about to go up. That's a government decision. Energy prices are soaring. And this should be pretty fertile ground there. And I'm not sure Boris Johnson was particularly... I mean, he talked a lot. I'm not sure he gave a huge amount of reassurance that he either gets it particularly or was planning to do anything about it.
Well, I'm not sure he addressed the parties, the Sue Gray reference, or indeed the money in the pocket issue. But let's go back and let's hear Angela's next question.
Mr. Speaker, inflation is about to hit 6%. That's the highest rate since the early 90s, when the Conservatives have been in power for over a decade. Marred in their sleaze with a divided party, a Prime Minister losing the support of his backbenchers and governing shambolically. And a Labour Party, Mr. Speaker, who is ready to take over and provide the Britain with a better future. Promised wage rises would offset inflation. They haven't and they won't. Millions of British workers now face a further pay cut, and his Chancellor is handing them a tax hike. Yes. What will the Prime Minister do to get a grip of this?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I know that she... It's great to be here with the Right Honourable Lady, the Shadow Secretary of State, for the future of work. We know the future of the job that she has in mind. I wish her well. But what we are focused on, Mr. Speaker, is delivering jobs for the British people. And it is a quite extraordinary thing that there are now record numbers of people in work, Mr. Speaker. 420,000 more than there were before the pandemic began, Mr. Speaker. We have youth unemployment at a record low, Mr. Speaker. And never let it be forgotten that when Omicron hit this country, Mr. Speaker, what was their instinctive response? They said, yep, that's right, Mr. Speaker. They said they needed a roadmap, that we needed a roadmap to lockdown. If we listened to them, we wouldn't have anybody working at all, Mr. Speaker.
Matt, Angela's got plenty of grist for her mill there, as you predicted. You know, inflation at 6%, sleaze, a divided party, you know, promised wage rises that would offset inflation that haven't materialised, and millions of workers facing further pay cuts. Do you think the Prime Minister was as able to bat that one off as he was the first?
Well, watching the feed, Angela Rayner is really enjoying herself. Yeah, you know, when she was like,
she's,
you know,
grinning from ear to ear, isn't she?
Yeah, and she's got her art. Yeah, she's having a laugh and trying to paint. And this is the thing that the Labour Party have been trying to do with limited success so far. Is say it's the 90s all over again. It's John Major, you know, Whitley, yeah, upset Tory backbenchers, loads of sleaze, time for a change. I think that the Keir Starmer is Tony Blair is a bit of a stretch, but he wrapped himself in Tony Blair in his big speech yesterday. Boris Johnson making a joke about one of Angela Rayner's many job titles as the Shadow Secretary of State for the Future of Work. I think that's a joke that I might have made last year when she got the job. But anyway, we don't need to dwell on that.
I thought he
much.
Was maybe having a dig at her wanting to be Prime Minister, wanting to be leader of the Labour Party,
because the relations between Angela Rayner and Keir Starmer are about as good as they are between Boris Johnson and his own MPs.
I was trying to remember the funny question that we had from one of our listeners, and it's quite relevant looking at this footage now of the Prime Minister, because it was, do you backcomb? Has he had a haircut?
Far from that, I think he might need to be doing a bit of backcombing, because, I mean, it's not for me to comment, but I would say if he was a cottage in a small rural village, I think you'd be getting the Thatcher in to patch up some of the thinner bits at the back. It's not so much that it's his trademark mess that everyone knows and loves. I think the mess is sort of, there's a certain amount of swirling that's going on to cover up the thinner bits.
You could work with Anna Murphy on The Times. You could probably do beauty with that description of the hairdo. That's very, very, very good indeed. Matt Chorley, can I ask you just a question? Because obviously this is not my normal territory insofar as I don't normally cover Prime Minister's questions. Is there a sense at all for you that the sort of jocularity that's being displayed by both Angela Rayner and Boris Johnson at the moment is slightly at odds with the sort of mood of a nation extremely worried, rising levels of Omicron variant, you know, worried about jobs, worried about inflation, worried about paying the bills, worried about heating, it's a cold phrase. And you know, this seems to be like sort of bant as usual, though I think Asma Mir, our colleague, has banned people from saying bant. Now I'm going to be in trouble.
I think you're right, actually, that there are, if out in the real world, dare I say, you're right, there are a whole load of things, whether it is concerns about Omicron, schools, hospitals, the cost of living. There's a lot of serious stuff there. And actually, I think one of the things which has happened, which I've really noticed in the last 18 months to 2 years of sort of coronavirus PMQs, is there's sort of because it's been the same subject every week, again and again and again. It's just sort of Omicron, coronavirus. As a result, there's not the same sort of interrogation. We know where Labour are. We know that Boris Johnson's going to say, as he did there, if it was up to the Labour Party, we'd still be in lockdown because of something they said last year. Whereas pre-coronavirus and actually pre-Brexit, you would get the opposition. They would ask about schools 1 week, transport the next week, benefits payments the following week. And you might get the slight sense of an interrogation of the Prime Minister, which you're right, this does seem a bit just... Also, I think the fact that we've got Angela Rayner doing the stand-in probably feeds into that a bit as well.
Well, let's go back and see how Angela Rayner's interrogation of the Prime Minister is going. This is round three. Ding, ding.
Mr. Speaker, I've heard on the grapevine there might be a vacancy for Prime Minister soon, so maybe I should have aspirations. The Prime Minister pretends it's not his fault. He blames global forces. He blames the market. Mr. Speaker, we're an aspirational party. Maybe the Prime Minister needs to be more aspirational for this country. Yeah. But, Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has made political choices that has led us into this place. His government has failed to invest in long-term energy security. His government decided to let gas storages collapse. His government let the energy market run out of control. 27 energy companies have gone bust in the last year. And now household bills are going through the roof. Or as the money-saving expert Martin Lewis put it, there will be a seismic hit on energy bills. Yep. Can't the Prime Minister see what's happening yet again? Working families are picking up the tab for his incompetence.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Speaker, he talks about energy. I think the House will agree she's got a lot more energy than the current leader of the opposition. I welcome her point, because actually what the government is doing is supporting people throughout the pandemic. 2.2 million people supported with the Warm Homes discount, Mr. Speaker, worth £140 per week, which we introduced. Pensioners supported with the £300 winter fuel payments, Mr. Speaker. Cold weather payments worth £25 a week for 4 million people up and down the country, Mr. Speaker. That is what we are doing, Mr. Speaker. And that is on top of everything we're doing to support people on low incomes, cutting taxes for those on universal credit, increasing the living wage, £1,000 more for everybody on the living wage, up record sums. And, Mr. Speaker, let me just remind the House of the fundamental difference between that party and this government. They would have kept us in lockdown in July, Mr. Speaker. When Omicron hit, they were calling for further restrictions. That's right, Mr. Speaker. We've been able to keep this country moving and keep the economy growing and keep the money coming into people's pockets, Mr. Speaker.
Matt, brave words there. He may regret saying that they called for further restrictions when Omicron was first identified, you know, if the case numbers keep going up as they are at the moment. But, I mean, very much sort of familiar territory there, wasn't it? You know, from Labour, working families are picking up the tab for the Prime Minister's incompetence and so on. But what about this? Labour is the aspirational party. Is that something that you think did come across from Keir Starmer's speech yesterday? Does it feel like that? It's an unusual term to describe them with.
Yeah, and I think there's a problem that it has been identified by pollsters and experts and focus groups and all that sort of thing, that Labour is seen not to be particularly aspirational. But the risk, I think, is that all patriotic or you know, other things that were criticism of Jeremy Corbyn, the risk then is you just go around saying we are patriotic and aspirational and forward-thinking and whatever. You need to sort of show, not tell. You know, you need a collection of policies and positions that show that you are aspirational, rather than just saying we are aspirational. Because lots of people who are aspirational don't know that they're aspirational. They just think that that's how you live your life, where you want to improve things and that sort of thing. I also think there's a slight risk with Angela Rayner, because she's sort of starting each question with a gag and then trying to get back to energy companies as well. I'm not sure it's sort of amounting to a huge amount so far. Although I have to say, I did just look up one of the things that Boris Johnson was boasting about was the cold weather payments. Which,
yeah, the £300.
You get £25 a week if it gets cold. They were introduced in 1988. So sometimes it's a bit of a cheek, I think, when Boris Johnson claims credit for something that Theresa May and David Cameron did, given that most of the time he pretends he has nothing to do with their governments. I think to now be claiming credit for something that happened under, I'm not sure if it was.
Is he talking
Labour,
about the
anyway.
Escalation of that payment, though? I mean, possibly. I wonder, I don't know.
I think he just basically read out everything that was available to anyone loosely connected with energy in his big red book.
He's been collecting post-its, hasn't he? what about his, I don't know, I mean, he is it endorsement or was he patronising Angela Rayner when he said that she has more energy?
That's sort of good knockabout stuff. That Boris Johnson, I think, feels more comfortable, weirdly, with, although she winds him up successfully by being funny, he'd much rather have banter, as we're not allowed to call it, with Angela Rayner. Whereas the sort of slightly straight and serious Keir Starmer, he slightly struggles a bit more with. And, you know, and he can warm up his back benches with some jokes that he's prepared beforehand. And it's actually a bit busier on the Tory benches than it is on the Labour benches, which is interesting. I wonder whether some Labour MPs have chosen to stay away. I mean, interestingly, absolutely everyone, as far as I can tell, has got a face mask on, apart from Boris Johnson, Angela Rayner and the Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle, which is quite a big change, even from a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and a suggestion that things are still pretty serious out there. We've had a text in from Leo, our regular listener, Leo. We both know Leo, don't we, Matt? He says, dear Matt and Mariella, would you both agree that Angela Rayner has so much more character and entertainment value at PMQs compared to Keir Starmer? Well, I think you probably won't agree with that, Matt. But can't he stay in isolation every Wednesday, says Leo?
Well, I think she's also entertaining. Whether or not that makes you the prime ministerial material, I don't know. That's the question.
Yeah. No, I think
they've tried to pitch it as a sort of John Prescott, Tony Blair dynamic. She's the funny northerner who gets everyone fired up and gives them a laugh and then Keir Starmer's a slightly more serious guy, but whether or not he has Tony Blair's charisma is a slightly separate question.
Yeah, and I also think, to your point, I mean, you know, on the sort of jokey brushing things off front, it's hard to beat Boris, isn't it? So, you know, stepping into those shoes might not be the best possible route to getting the best of him in a way. Leo also wants to know whether we think Rayner is relishing this opportunity to flex her muscles as a potential future Labour leader. I sort of feel that's where the comedic element is coming from, Matt.
Yeah. I think that's... it's definitely true. She loves it. She loves it. You know, they've, and I know her team have spent the morning trying to come up with jokes and you know, or a sound bite that will get her on the news tonight, because quite often Keir Starmer fails to do that. So yeah, she relishes being in the spotlight like this. Whether or not she's the one who's going around rubbing coronavirus on Keir Starmer's doorknob, I wouldn't like to speculate.
I mean, he's not a great ad for vaccinations, is he? But maybe more of that later. let's go back to Angela Rayner for question number four.
What this Prime Minister is doing is increasing taxes to the hard-working people of this country. That's what he's doing. That's what he didn't promise in his manifesto, but that's what he's doing to the people. And I quote, Mr Speaker, the poorest households spend three times more on their income on household energy bills than the richest households spend. VAT on energy bills makes gas and electricity more expensive. Yeah. Not my words, Mr Speaker, but the words of the Prime Minister himself. When energy bills are going to be hiked again in April, any decent government would find a way to help British families. Even the Tory backbenchers have finally accepted Labour's call to cut VAT on energy bills. So will he finally stand up to his Chancellor and do the same?
Mr Speaker, let me remind, because she wasn't obviously listening to the previous answer, let me remind her, the warm homes discount already, 2.2 million people supported to the tune of £140 a week. Pensioners supported with £300 through the winter fuel payment. The cold weather payments for 4 million people. And they now have the effrontery, Mr Speaker, having campaigned, and she did too, I think, didn't she?
Yes.
I think. Oh yes, she campaigned to remain in the EU.
Yes.
Oh yes, she did. They now have the barefaced cheek to come to this House of Commons and say that they want to cut VAT on fuel, when everybody knows, and he did too, Mr Speaker, everybody knows full well it would be absolutely impossible if they were to do what Labour would do and go back into the EU, remain aligned with the EU single market. That is the objective of the Labour Party. They can't be trusted on Brexit, Mr Speaker, and they can't be trusted on the economy.
Well, Matt, returning to that spurious claim that you date back to 1988 in terms of winter fuel and making quite a big deal of that. And also, you know, the VAT cut, impossible to do that in the EU. I'm surprised that he's so eager to bring up Brexit, because there are so many other elements of the economy at the moment that could be sort of used to refute his claims that we're better off, are they not?
Yeah, and actually, it's a really, you know, it's such an old trick that Angela Rayner pulled, where you get up and you read out something which is damning about the government's current position, and then you say, not my words, Mr Speaker, it's the words of the Prime Minister or the Cabinet Minister or whatever it might be. And because it's, and what she was doing there was she was reading out Boris Johnson three times during the referendum, promised that one of the upsides of leaving the EU would be that you could take, because EU rules meant you couldn't have zero VAT on energy bills. He wrote in The Sun, fuel bills will be lower for everyone as the 5% VAT rate could be axed. Right now, Downing Street are saying that it's more that we have the option. That's the beauty of Brexit. If we have the option to cut VAT on energy bills, they're just not choosing to take that option. And so you do have this slightly weird situation where Boris Johnson promised something in order to win the EU referendum. The Labour Party, having long been accused of being Remainers, are now saying, well, we now are outside the EU, Brexit's happened, why don't we use these powers and cut the energy bills? And then the government, the Brexit-supporting government, are the ones who are saying, no, we're not going to do that. I mean, there's a separate conversation about whether or not it's particularly well-targeted, because if you took VAT off, you and I would benefit from that, Mariella, whereas you might be able to, you know, there might be other ways of directing help at those who are really struggling with their energy bills.
Yeah,
people try to follow it, it's a bit confusing who's on which side.
But I think absolutely the one thing that can't be argued is that this whole business with, energy companies and the energy crisis and the rise in energy costs is an incredibly kind of potent topic, isn't it? I mean, people are really animated about it and are really feeling the pinch, and it looks like it's going to kind of carry on until the government do respond in some way in terms of what they're going to do about it. I was interested in the way that Angela Rayner was there sort of pitting Rishi and Boris against each other. You know, will he stand up to his Chancellor? That was quite an interesting little move there.
Yeah, well, so that's exactly the same. Boris Johnson's trying to wind her up and needle the relationship between Angela Rayner and Keir Starmer. And she does the same, because the relationship between Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak isn't great either.
Well, let's go back to Angela Rayner, who looks like she's rather enjoying herself, for the penultimate question, I think, question number five.
So, Prime Minister, how's it going? Are you OK? The Prime Minister and his Chancellor have presided over economic mismanagement, low growth and neglect of our public services. And their resolution to fix this, whacking more taxes on working people. Combine the tax rise with soaring energy prices and the average family faces a hit of a £1,200. This is an iceberg, Mr Speaker, right ahead. So will he finally stop and change course?
Order. We started the new year not in the way we left the last one. You did give me an assurance we were going to try and calm down. So if we can, it will be helpful. Angela Rayner. Yeah, yeah.
Mr Speaker, £1,200 hit right away. Yeah. So will he finally stop and change course, or will he plough on towards what will be a disaster for thousands of families?
Mr Speaker, as a direct result of what we've already done on universal credit, a single mother with two kids is £1,200 better off, Mr Speaker. As a result of what we've done with the living wage, Mr Speaker, introduced by this Conservative government, they'll never let it be forgotten, everybody on the living wage has seen another £1,000 in their income every year, Mr Speaker. But that's not the point. The fundamental, and we will continue to look after people throughout the pandemic, but the fundamental point is that because of the steps the government has taken, because of the tough decisions we've taken, because of the balanced and the proportionate approach that we've taken to COVID, we've been able to keep this country open, keep our economy moving, more open than any other comparable economy in Europe. And they know it, Mr Speaker. And they opposed it every step of the way. And that's why people are seeing increases in employment and increases in their pay packets as well.
Lorena.
Well, did she hit a sore point there? Iceberg right ahead. Will he finally stop and change course? Angela Rayner's words. But I wasn't quite sure which specific policy she was talking about there.
Yeah, I think I suspect that was the clip she wants for the news. I don't know. She might do a proper peroration for her last question. But this is an iceberg that's about to hit. Family's been hit by a bill, extra £1,200. That's the message they want to get across on the news. The thing that's worth pointing out, one of the upsides of all the MPs wearing masks in the House of Commons is that cabinet ministers think they can't be seen laughing. Now, a couple of times when the camera was cut to the front benches, I'm pretty confident that Rishi Sunak and Simon Hart, the Welsh Secretary, quite enjoying Angela Rayner needling Boris Johnson on one or two. When she said, "Are you OK?" It was very close to "You OK, hun?" Across the dispatch box. They were laughing along with her. So they seem to be enjoying themselves as well.
Well, I don't know. Speaking of things that weren't quite said, did you notice that he nearly said, "Bare-faced cheek to come to this..." And then stopped. I thought, oh, my God. Yeah. I don't know where he was going with that answer, the Prime Minister. Anyway, let's go back to the final question from Angela Rayner.
Mr Speaker, this Prime Minister always gives with one hand and takes away with the other. Under this Prime Minister, the country is worse off. Prices for everyday goods are soaring out of control. Hard-earned savings will be hit, and the wages of working people won't go as far. Inflation isn't an economic theory, it has serious consequences for people's lives. We need serious solutions, Mr Speaker, to stop people falling into poverty or debt. Instead, Mr Speaker, we have this Prime Minister and his incompetent leadership. And every time we are faced with a challenge, he denies there's a problem. He tries to laugh it off. He looks for someone else to blame. So can I suggest to the Prime Minister, it's not about brushing your hair, it's about brushing up on your act. Does he accept his incompetence is taking our country backwards and costing our country dear?
No, Mr Speaker. What I tell the House and tell the country is that Labour incompetence has ruined this country time and time again. And there has never been a Labour government that has left office with unemployment lower than when they came in. And what is her answer, Mr Speaker, to the energy crisis? It is to nationalise our energy. It was, in fact, Labour's failure to invest in supply over a decade or more that reduced our ability to have cheaper, cleaner energy, Mr Speaker. We are rectifying that. We're taking the tough decisions that this country needs for the long term. And it's because we've taken those tough decisions, Mr Speaker, because we've taken the balanced and proportionate approach that we have, that they opposed every step of the way, that we have youth unemployment at a record low. We have 420,000 more people in jobs now than there were before the pandemic began. And, Mr Speaker, we not only have the most open society and economy in Europe, but we also have the fastest economic growth in the G7. Completely contrary to what she has just said, Mr Speaker. And that is because of our stable, balanced and proportionate approach. And when never let it be forgotten, when Omicron presented itself, what did they go for? They reached for the lever of more restrictions. They said lockdown, Mr Speaker. We said boosters. They carp from the sidelines. We get on with the job.
Well, Matt, I have to say, I very much enjoyed spending this extra time with you, but I found the whole proceedings slightly unilluminating, to be fair. I don't normally, as I say, focus in on it as forensically
world.
As you do. Well, exactly. But I mean, it does feel like sort of party politics back in the 1990s. I don't know. It just feels like very sort of retro. We have basically run out of time. So let's have a closing statement from you, Matt Chorley, on the first PMQs of the year.
So I think Angela Rayner did a decent job of focusing on something that people care about, i.e. your energy bills are going up loads. She has a decent soundbites in there. She'll probably get herself on the news bulletins tonight. There was a bit of knockabout. Nothing, as far as I could tell, that really upset the horse. You know, Tory MPs aren't going to think that Boris Johnson's on the ropes particularly. But whatever you think of Boris Johnson and Angela Rayner, spare a thought for Ed Davey, the leader of the Lib Dems. He's just popped up to ask a question. Ed Davey, the actual leader of the Lib Dems, gets up and the Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle, called him Ed Balls. So, and in response, he stood up, asked about the energy crisis, and in response, Boris Johnson responded to his question saying, "Balls is the word." So, no matter how bad you think your day's going, at least you're not Ed Davey. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr and Mrs.
Oh,
no,
how
would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.